From the historic Cosmic Potato Studios, welcome to That Star Trek Podcast. This is your place for detailed analysis and speculation of all things Trek. Now, on with the show.
Welcome back to another episode of That Star Trek Podcast, your one-stop pod for reviews, discussion, examination, and speculation of all things Trek. I'm your guest host, Neek Yeager. And today we've got the same people as last time. Sean, how are you?
Hi, Bob.
Oh, wait. Wrong.
And Rick, what's up?
Greetings, Robert.
And of course, we've got Madison the Younger. How are you, Scott?
Moon Show reference.
Well done. All right, so we will be continuing our discussion of our changing views of Star Trek over time. I believe the last time we recorded was a couple weeks ago, but I think we had gotten up to Deep Space Nine. But before we carry on with that, do you want to just quickly discuss what we've all just watched, which is the new trailer for Discovery Season 5?
Sure.
All right, really? Well then I will let, since Sean proposed this, I will let him take the lead.
I haven't, like, examined it thoroughly. I watched it one time about 20 minutes before we started recording, but they did either earlier today or late yesterday, they released the Paramount Plus official trailer for season 5 of Discovery, and I thought it was kind of interesting. I mean, obviously this is the last season of Discovery, but when they filmed the season, they didn't know it was the last season of Discovery. But the trailer is kind of made as if the trailer knows it's the last season. So it's kind of interesting that there's a lot of very big cinematic scenes in this trailer, which are usually indicative of a show that's winding down. They try to go out big, you know. A lot of shows do that, have done it for years. And I just wanted to see what you guys thought of what you saw and what we think might be coming up this season.
Well, I know that Rick has thoughts on this, so I'll just sneak in real quick because I don't have a whole lot to say about it. It seemed to move very quick. It was very light on, like, specific details about what the season's going to be about. There's something important we have to find. Ooh, that's about it. And then the rest of the trailer seemed to be a whole lot of bombast, a whole lot of action, camera moving everywhere, and like indecipherable action that you can't really tell what's happening, which, and hopefully it doesn't sound too harsh, but that seems to be about par for the course for Discovery, in my opinion, over the past couple seasons. But other than that, it wasn't the most remarkable trailer. I'm looking forward to seeing all these characters back one more time, but I've really don't have any idea what we're in for after this trailer. The only other thing is, in response to Sean talking about how they didn't know it was the final season when they were filming, but the trailer makes it very clear it's the final season. Does it feel like there's been a longer than normal gap between seasons 4 and 5? Is it just me?
Describe normal anymore.
Yeah, I don't know. Time has no meaning for me anymore at this age.
That's totally fair. The reason I bring it up is I have a suspicion, and I'm sure that, you know, once the season airs and we start hearing more, like, behind the scenes stuff, I suspect that a reason that it's taken so long for season 5 to come out after season 4 is when they learned it was the final season, they probably did some script changes and a lot of reshoots.
They said they did.
They did? Okay. Well, I don't pay attention. What do you think I am? A Star Trek fan?
They were physically they were physically shooting the season when the announcement came that it was going to be the last season. And so I think what I heard was, like, the last 3 episodes had to be almost rewritten to give the series a wrap up. Especially the last episode. So,
Yeah, they said when that news came out that they had to do some restuff. So you're not wrong.
I'm not wrong. I'm just also not well researched.
Well, I think we talked about it, but you know, I never know what we talked about on the show. So
I don't know what we talked about. What do you think I am, a podcaster? but that's all I had. But Rick, I know you have thoughts on this trailer. I want to hear them.
There are two things that stood out to me in this trailer, and you know, and what Neek was not being facetious. We literally watched it 3 minutes ago. my first thought was, "Oh, goody, another MacGuffin." It was kind of like, "Can we do something other than having to find something again?"
No, it is the age of the mystery box. Yeah. Deal with it.
Yeah, I don't really think any TV show can do. Especially a science fiction show, they have to have something.
and the other thing that stands out to me, I mean, yes, you're right. It was, you know, it's a typical trailer. Boom, 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 explosion, kiss, oh my, bloom, bam, bam. But where was Detmer? Everybody was in that trailer but Detmer.
Okay. I didn't know you had such a hard on for Detmer. All right,
I wouldn't put it quite that way, but I do like the character quite a bit, and
I like
he's
the character
one of the characters
well.
That got some development. And I remember when we got the trailer for season 4. Anyway, I just remember watching a trailer, and it had been a while since the show was on, and you know, we'd been through a season of Lower Decks and Strange New Worlds. And it was going through, and we saw everybody on the bridge. It's like, and Burnham and everybody. And when Detmer came up on the screen, for some reason, I was just like, oh, cool. I really miss these people. And so she was conspicuously absent from this trailer, and I really hope that doesn't mean she's not on this season.
I haven't heard anything about her not like being on the show. So yeah.
I didn't realize until you mentioned it that I did not notice the absence of Detmer, Awosakan, other guy on the bridge who I think runs tactical, whose name I can't remember. I don't know if we saw Culber. He was probably in there.
Yeah,
we heard his voice.
I remember seeing him. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Towards the end, he and Stamets were on screen.
Yeah. So I assume that they're all going to be in the show. I just, again, this is an indicator of the kind of trailer that they made. But full disclosure, I was the first of all of us to watch it. I think I saw it like early this morning, probably like 4:30 this morning. Yeah, so my barely awake self watched it once between getting out of bed and getting into the shower, because even though we're recording on a Saturday, I got to work a full 8 hours. So I don't remember much of the trailer. Yeah, I just assumed that everyone's there.
And trailers are, you know, they're never a accurate representation of what a season is going to be necessarily. So I'm not going to get up in a tizzy about it.
No, I'm not like,
Rick, you're in a tizzy.
Yes, goddammit. I would like to see. It's the last season. It's already done.
I haven't heard. I mean, I haven't had time to look for any breakdowns to see if anybody had gone, you know, shot by shot through the trailer to kind of give any
Screen Rant will
indication of what they think might be coming. But you know, I'm
Screen
Rant. I did see Linus. Linus in the background, so he's back.
Yay!
Thank
all right,
God.
All right. Moving on. Enough about the trailer. Let's move on to the topic at hand: our changing views of Star Trek. So we had gotten up to Voyager. Anyone have any, did your perception of Voyager change over time, or did Voyager change your perception of any other aspect of Star Trek when you watched it?
I'll jump in because
Go ahead, Scott.
I know I'm not going to have like a whole lot to say on it. Famous last words. I do remember starting Voyager when it first debuted. We caught the series premiere and probably several episodes of the first season, if not the entire first season, when it was originally airing. But because of that particular time in life, not because of any lack of interest in Star Trek, but at that age with things that were happening, I couldn't stick to the broadcast schedule that we were all slaves to back in those days. So I fell off the Voyager wagon. I had to go back and rewatch it later. I do remember feeling it was a bit blander, and I wasn't as pulled in and engaged by many of the characters compared to Next Generation and Deep Space Nine. I always thought that Janeway was fantastic, but Harry, Tom, Chakotay, they were just kind of there. I didn't really feel a whole lot of investment in them. I've never really understood the hate that much of the fandom throws at Neelix. I thought he was a fine character. And while, yes, we have talked to death the problematic aspect of Neelix dating a two-year-old, I still, overall, I found him to be an enjoyable character. He was the one who tried to keep things happy. He tried to find the joy in the situation while the rest of the crew was just sad because they are far away from home. So that positivity, I thought, was a nice aspect of Neelix. Kes, I thought Kes was fantastic. I love Jennifer's performance her entire time on the show. I thought she was great, and I was sad to see her go. So it was enjoyable enough as Trek. I didn't love the Gilligan's Island aspect, and not all the characters really grabbed me. But when I went back and I did a rewatch in more recent years, I was a bit more forgiving of it. Knowing where it was going, knowing what to expect, I was able to pay more attention to the people and not the storylines. And it did not jump up to the top of my list of favorite Trek series, but I don't consider it, Voyager, so the boring one. No, it's just Voyager. It's also fine. That's kind of where I am on it. I was never able to, and I don't know that I ever will be able to, come around on the character of B'Elanna. I never liked her. Roxanne did what she could with what she was given, but in my opinion, what she was given was, hey, be terribly unpleasant every minute of every show.
Relatable.
Anytime you're on screen, be unreasonably unpleasant to everyone. Eventually, we'll put you in a relationship with Tom. Be unpleasant to him as well. Always.
Yeah, but he was into it.
This is perhaps a bit of hyperbole, I understand, but this is what I come away with when I think about Voyager. What's the standout impression that I get of B'Elanna? Just always mean to everyone for no reason.
But you're not projecting or anything, so that's fine.
Okay, I'm done.
You said you didn't have much to say, but you went on. Okay, go ahead, Sean.
I was in high school when Voyager started, and I remember being really excited that it was coming out because I had loved Next Generation. I was still loving Deep Space Nine, and I was just like, the more Trek the better, I'm fine with it. And I really liked the show. I watched the first probably three seasons. I watched every time it was on. I was watching it. After that, I had a job that was requiring me to work at the time it was on all the time. So I was missing it a lot. I missed a lot of episodes. I've seen every episode since then, but going back and looking at it now, the first couple of seasons, especially, it seemed like we have all these character roles that belong in a Star Trek show. We have to fill those roles. We need to have an ensign that's brand new to the job and he's all about the job. We have to have another character that's kind of like the Han Solos, making wisecracks all the time. We need to have somebody that's trying to experience humanity. You know, you've got to fill all these roles. So, a lot of the characters were kind of wooden to me. I don't want to bash Garrett Wong, but I did not think Garrett Wong was a very good actor. Still, when I go back and watch the first couple of seasons, I still think he was terrible in those first couple of seasons. He got better.
But is this just your view of Voyager, or is this a reflection of how this affected your view of Star Trek?
No, this is just Voyager, I think. I thought Voyager was just... I don't want to say that they were copying Next Generation, but I think they were trying to be as much Next Generation as they possibly could, because Deep Space Nine was a lot different than the Next Generation, and they wanted to, I don't know if they had lost some viewership or whatever, and they wanted to get those people back, so they were trying to make another show that looked a lot like the Next Generation.
Did that then affect your view of Next Generation?
No. I loved the Next Generation. It just felt like when Star Trek makes a new show, they're going to want to make it in this. They're going to want to carbon copy this stuff. We got to fill these roles. We got to make it this way, you know. And that's what I felt like Voyager was doing. I didn't mind the Gilligan's Island aspect of it at the time, because when they put that premise together, I don't see how once you introduce that premise, I don't see how you avoid, because you can say, okay, well, once we get out to the Delta Quadrant, well, then let's just explore the Delta Quadrant. But that's not what people are going to do. I mean, people are going to try to get home, you know. So I think that it was, that's just what I think a real life, if it was like a real life situation, that's what they would be doing, is spending most of their time trying to get home, you know, and evading the alien of the week. That's a cheap replica of an alien that we already had on another show. So the Kazon are basically the Klingons. You know, with bad hair.
instead of forehead ridges, they have the hair.
Yeah, bad hair. Yeah. So, and I mean, I don't want to act like I'm disparaging Voyager, because I think that a lot of the best Star Trek episodes that I've seen were Voyager episodes. I think that it got better as it went on, and then you get into the last couple of seasons, they kind of turned it into more of an action show than a exploration show. So I don't think that they could. I don't think that Voyager really. They couldn't win, because they had fans that were saying, "Well, you're not enough of this," when they're doing one thing, and then when they shift and they're doing something else, "Well, you're too much of this. We want more of this." So I think Voyager tried to play to both sides, and it didn't always come out on top. But I still enjoy it when I go back and watch it. I try to skip those first couple of seasons, I think.
Have any of you done a rewatch of Voyager?
Yeah, I did a few years ago, but it's probably been 5-6 years since I watched the entire show.
I tried. It's been 12 years, because it was before Sharon was born. No, it has to have been since then. And this is where my view has changed. And it's not for the better. I enjoyed Voyager the first time through. I think I've mentioned before that, you know, Wednesday nights, it aired Wednesday nights in my market. And a bunch of us would gather at our friend Kim and Todd's house. And you know, so we had the group dynamic of getting together. Usually Kim would cook and then we'd watch Star Trek. And so I had a warm fuzzy about Voyager. And it was, you know, I wasn't like blind to its faults. It was a terribly uneven show. But, you know, I had pleasant memories about it. When I did go back and try to rewatch, I couldn't make it through season one. And I know I need to. I know it gets better. But season one is so bad. And I think because I know what is ahead, and it's not just the writing of the show, because that's, you know, even the first time around, warp particles pissed me off. watching Kate Mulgrew trying to find Janeway's voice, because I know she will, and I know that Janeway will become an amazing character eventually. It's kind of like the problem I had with trying to watch the first two seasons of TNG and watching Patrick Stewart trying to find Picard. It's painful. and maybe it's a little more painful watching Mulgrew because she didn't have that, you know, Stewart had that RSC grounding of he could just get into any character and just bluster through it, where it kind of felt like Mulgrew was really stumbling a bit at the beginning. And it was knowing what she will become, it was really hard to watch her not there yet. And I am 180 degrees opposed to Scott's opinion. I love B'Elanna. I loved B'Elanna from the get-go, and she just got better as time went on for me because she wasn't just angry all the time, angry. And like watch Dreadnought, or the one where they pick up that android. She's incredibly compassionate. But then she breaks a guy's nose in engineering, too. She was one of the few characters who kept the Maquis-ness beyond the second episode when they just dropped it all. So I really liked Roxanne Dawson's portrayal of B'Elanna. I don't think she... Because, you know, going back to DS9, it took me a while to get into Kira because she was just... Anything Sisko says, I'm going to say the opposite. For a while, and then they finally backed off on that and let her grow into more than just the angry Bajoran who hates the fact that Starfleet is here. And then her character became a lot more nuanced, and I thought they did that with B'Elanna pretty quickly, a lot more quickly. I also no longer think that Janeway should have killed Tuvix.
Okay, we're not going to get into that. This is not that show. But Scott, I stepped on your B'Elanna hate, but did you have anything else to say about Voyager?
I did not give the Doctor his proper due. Bob Picardo was masterful in that role. I think he absolutely owned it from beginning to end. There were times, especially later in the series, where I think that the storylines they gave to his exploration of his own humanity and expanding his programming, they might have gotten maybe just a little esoteric. The episode where he, I think, doesn't he consider like leaving Voyager to become an opera singer?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know if we needed that episode, but just some of the ways that they had him trying to explore his humanity, while not bad, got on occasion a little tiresome for me, but not anything close to a deal breaker. And other times where they had him explore were some of the most compelling episodes of the Doctor that I remember. When he created a holiday program to have a family, and B'Elanna went in and changed it because I'm gonna help you to know what it's like being human. And by help you, I mean I'm going to absolutely shatter your heart and spirit and make you wish that you were dead rather than have ever created this holodeck program. Yeah, I didn't love how she went about it, but the way that Picardo played the tail end of that episode, fantastic.
There are a couple of things about Voyager that bother me, and one is that I don't have a problem with the premise of we're going to have this starship and they're going to be stranded in the Delta Quadrant and they need to find their way back. But the whole Maquis thing, I think, was a mistake. Having a Maquis crew and then pretending like you're going to have stories about blending the two together and all that. That's not what the show was about, and they abandoned it immediately, like Rick said a minute ago. And then trying to come back to it, though, it in like season 6 or season 7, and just by that time, I'm like, whatever, you know.
Mind you, every once in a while, they did have an episode where the Maquis were relevant, and those were great episodes. Like, the whole Seska arc was fantastic. Yeah.
That's another good aspect of the series that I never think of it right away, but having one of your main characters, or at least one of your stronger supporting characters, flip and find out that they're actually a villain, and then that character departs and becomes a recurring villain later in the series. I thought that was a very clever idea, and they executed it very well, I thought.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do wish they had stuck with the idea of the Maquis crew and the Starfleet crew trying to integrate, and that being an ongoing thing.
We also don't take
rather than just wave it away after a couple episodes. If they had stuck with it, it really could have been something if they had tried.
If you've got a Maquis crew which are guilty of war crimes, and you immediately take one of them, make them your first officer, and take the other one and make them your chief engineer, like, immediately. I also would like to have explored a little bit about the Doctor. At what point does he become an individual? You know what I'm saying? Because there can be an argument that every holodeck character that's created has the potential for being a life form. At what point is it immoral to just erase potential people? Because you have the Doctor that kind of gradually over time learned to be a person.
Well, I mean, that was one of the central themes of Voyager. Yeah. And I kind of like that the show never spoon-fed us that answer. It's up to us as a viewer to come up with our own answer for that. Yeah. Same with the much maligned Tuvix. It's not the show saying this or that. It's up to the audience to pick a side. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, there's so much hate for that episode, but I think it's one of the best.
Oh yeah,
because it is so divisive.
Well, yeah, I mean, if we're still arguing about recently, it 30 years later. Yeah,
it's a powerful episode.
There you go. And I actually feel the same way about Threshold. Like, the fact that people are still talking about it 30 years later, like, that means it was doing something.
Yeah, I haven't done a full rewatch of the show, but I have watched a few episodes, and yeah, I watched Threshold within the last 2 or 3 years. And right up until the very end, it's a fucking awesome episode. It's one of their best ones. It's just, they so didn't stick the landing. And they just,
I don't find it any worse than, like, you know, on TNG, they all, you know, de-evolve or whatever.
I hated that episode too. Because, again, for the same reason. It's, you know,
yeah, it's a little silly.
You just flip a switch and suddenly they're all better.
Yeah. Yeah. But again, it's like,
well, I mean, that's just television.
That's such a well-trodden Star Trek trope that it's like, okay, well, you know, whatever.
It is. And it always bothers me when they
do that. Yeah. No, I know. I agree. But it's like, you can't, you can't single out one episode for being guilty of that when so many episodes are guilty of that sort of thing.
I think you can, and I don't want to get too deep into the weeds on this one episode, but I think, and maybe because Threshold is such a good episode until they get to that part where it's just like, and Voyager is one of the most egregious series for this of, 42 minutes of problem and 3 minutes of solution. But that episode, I think it really stands out because the setup is so great. And then you're watching Tom deteriorate into this thing. And then he captures Janeway, and then they go, and then they, and then you get this almost ludicrous lizard thing at the end. And then they come back, and within 30 seconds, oh, they're all better and they're not lizards anymore. And it just, because the episode was so well crafted.
No, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
But we still, none of us have really answered the central question. We've just sort of gone on a Voyager rant talking about what we do or don't like about the show. And that's fine if that's what we want to do. But the idea was to talk about, how have our opinions or how have our views of this show changed over time? Or how has this show made our view of the overall franchise change?
Well, and that's kind of what I was getting at. I was, jokingly with Tuvix and not so jokingly with Threshold, I dismissed Tuvix at the time I saw it. I thought it was just, that was a stupid one. And I was also in the Threshold was an awful episode. The 47s, when they find a pickup truck in space, Voyager, a lot of the things they did at the time, I just kind of went, oh, that was stupid, but what's next? Over the years, I've both harshened on some of it, but I've mellowed on some of the other stuff. So like the 47s, I rewatched that. I must have watched more of this season, more than just the first season. Because I watched the 47s. Was it 47s or 42? No, it was 47s. And I remember thinking that was a ridiculous episode, but then I watched it. It was really good. I don't think Voyager changed my attitude towards all of Trek. It certainly cemented my dislike for what Berman was doing to Trek. Because a lot of the problems with Voyager came from above. Both Voyager and Enterprise, when we talk about Enterprise, if there had been less meddling from the front office, I think they both would have been much better shows.
Well, I wanted to ask, do you guys think that Voyager ruined the Borg?
Yes.
Because I thought that the Next Generation introduced the Borg, the Next Generation overdid the Borg, then the Next Generation made First Contact and made the Borg good again.
Yeah, but First Contact introduced the Borg Queen, and I might argue that it's the concept of the Queen that, quote unquote, ruined the Borg.
Okay.
Voyager just picked up what TNG was putting down.
I think that there's certain aspects of the Queen that I'm okay with, because if you're going to keep doing the Borg, you eventually have to have a Borg that you can talk to. You have to, if you're gonna villainize the Borg, then there has to be a villain there, but I think that Voyager did too much with it and kind of watered it down a little bit. But
and I think there's something to the notion that with First Contact creating the concept of the Queen. Yeah, that was fine for the movie. Then Voyager picks up the thread of having a queen, and I think that opened the door to take the Borg in a direction, especially with the amount of exposure the Borg got in Voyager, taking it in a direction that that softened the dangerous edge that they had. Because when we see the Borg in Voyager, it's usually, excuse me, not always, but usually in conjunction with the Borg Queen, which more and more was portrayed as an individual, as a person who is mean and evil, but with that sultry, seductive side that always comes into play. So it becomes, oh, the Borg is one antagonist bad lady with the biggest army you've ever heard of that works for. It's not a faceless horde of drones. It wasn't a collective. It was one person with a whole bunch of soldiers.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I just think Voyager kind of overdid it a little bit. And, I mean, no, and it started by bringing Seven in, but I mean, Seven turned into one of the best characters in Star Trek, not just on Voyager, but, you know, in Picard too.
Yeah, the character and Jerry confounded a lot of expectations by being like legitimately impressive as a performer and as a character.
Mm-hmm.
Brought on for the M appeal, to go back to the original BBC Avengers, brought on for the appeal, but became a strong character and an outstanding performance against all odds.
Yeah, I really think that the writers thought, or once they realized how competent an actor she was, they started to just really throwing stuff her way, and it was amazing. Drone, I think, is one of the best episodes of any Star Trek series, period.
Agreed. All right, so should we move on to Enterprise? So it is Enterprise that, for me, inspired this topic in the beginning. And I touched on this last week, or however long ago we recorded, time has no meaning. The first time I watched Enterprise in real time, I didn't hate it. And I was almost defensive about it because everyone else hated it. And I liked what they did with the Vulcans. I liked T'Pol. I liked Trip. I hated Archer. And then I rewatched it, I don't know, 10 years later, and I had forgotten it completely. The only thing I remembered about it was that I hate Archer. I didn't remember why I hated Archer. I just knew I did. And that I liked what they did with the Vulcans. And so watching it the second time, you know, the series is progressing. It's going on and on and on. And I'm just like, huh, I don't hate Archer. I wonder when that's going to happen. I wonder at what point I'm going to start hating him, because I sure do remember hating him. And it never happened. And like the series ends and I turn to Gus and I'm like, I don't get it. I don't remember why I hated him so much. Like, I actually really enjoyed it. So my second viewing of Enterprise, I really enjoyed. And maybe it's just because I was going into it with like fresh eyes, and I didn't have preconceived notions, and I didn't have that. Because I don't know if you guys recall, if any of you watched it in real time, but Enterprise was really shit upon by the fandom. It was like sort of like what's happening to Discovery now. People freaking hated that show. Yep. And they piled on it. And it was hard to be a fan of that show. Again, the same way it's hard to be a fan of Discovery now. So then, fast forward another 5 years or whatever it is, I rewatch Enterprise a third time, and I'm right back to hating Archer. And I'm like, oh, now I remember, because he's a freaking douche. He's so angry. He's so belligerent. He's mean. And he does a lot of unethical things. And he's just not fun to be around. So there you go. That was my complete 360 on Enterprise. Thoughts?
I need to rewatch Enterprise. I started to do a rewatch 2 years ago. I watched Enterprise as it aired. And when did it was like 2003 to 2008? Is that sort of right-ish?
I don't know. Tom's not here to do the Googling for us.
What was the question? So
there's no way for any of us to know.
When Enterprise started, I want to say Enterprise started the
same year that Voyager went off. So it was 2002, I believe.
Okay, so I was newlywed and had moved to Louisiana, and it started my first teaching gig. And my wife and I watched it. The internet was a brand new thing, or relatively. I never liked Archer either, but I don't think for the same reason. I feel bad about saying, I've said this to Chris and he has forgiven me for saying it, but Scott Bakula just doesn't play angry well. I just never, you know, when he was just being calm Archer, he was fine. But whenever he had to like stand off and like back off or we'll shoot the hell out of you, I just never buy him when he's angry, when he's trying to be tough. It just never worked for me. Now, one thing I have changed on about Enterprise, and this was a big change. I thought Jolene Blaylock was awful the first time I watched the show. I thought she was wooden. I thought she mistook emotionless for just being flat. I never liked her character, and I thought she did a terrible job. When I did my rewatch, at least as far as I got, I realized right away how wrong I was. She did a fantastic job as T'Pol.
Agreed.
There was so much nuance there.
So much repressed emotion in her performance. Like, she's like on the edge at every moment.
And I even went online and I was like, Jolene Blaylock will never see this, but I owe her a huge apology. The rest of it, I really need to rewatch it, because constantly people are like, oh, you remember this on Enterprise? I'm like, no. I know I watched every episode. The only episode I didn't see in real time was the second part of A Mirror Darkly, and I don't remember why, but I didn't get to see it when it aired, and I've since gone back. Those are the, like, aside from Mirror Mirror, the two Enterprise Mirror Universe episodes are my favorite Mirror Universe, or are like the only Mirror Universe episodes I really like.
Okay. Sean, what are your thoughts on Enterprise?
I want to correct myself. It was September 26, 2001 is when Enterprise started.
Oh, okay.
So
the first year of it, then I was reeling from a terrible breakup.
For a whole year?
Still.
I thought Enterprise was a good show. I didn't get to see it in real time because this was a time when my kids were really young and in my market. Well, no, this is a network show, so it wasn't like market driven, like it came on at different times in different places. But I don't know, the time that it came on, I just was not a good time for me to be watching TV. So I didn't get to see it very, very often in its first run. Now, I would catch up on some of the reruns in the summer, and I have since gone back and watched the majority of it. And I thought it's good, but it's the first time since the original series that Star Trek was a network show. And so I think that the network had a lot to do with some of the stuff that we don't really care for. Especially
Voyager
some
was
of the,
was UPN.
Yeah, it was on UPN. Oh, Voyager was UPN too, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was that they launched the network with Voyager.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Well, when the Enterprise first started, they didn't even want to call it Star Trek.
Yeah.
They just wanted it to be called Enterprise. And it was called Enterprise. And then the whole decontamination chamber thing, rubbing goo all over each other, that was all the network. Hey, we gotta put some sexy stuff in here. Let's rub goo all over each other while we're in our underwear, you know, that kind of stuff. But I thought that the characters, what I said about Voyager, the characters being wooden in the first couple of seasons, I didn't think Enterprise did that. I thought that the characters were pretty good from the beginning. I agree with what you guys said about T'Pol. I thought that she was a little one note the first time I saw her. She got better as the series progressed. I can't remember at what point I thought that she was better. It was probably that episode, what was it, Carbon Creek? Is that the name of that episode?
Yeah.
It takes place in the 50s.
Yeah.
That might be the one that changed my mind on her. And of course, I was a big Scott Bakula fan already because I was I love Quantum Leap when it was on. So I didn't even hate the theme song. I still don't hate the theme song. I think the theme song is fine.
I haven't changed on that at all.
I kind of like that it's different, you know. It's a theme song that has words in it and stuff. But yeah, I mean, Enterprise was a different kind of show because it was the first time that they had decided to do Star Trek as a prequel. But yeah, I think the network getting involved kind of hampered it a lot. And I think that it probably would have lasted a full 7 seasons like the rest of them did, or like the previous few had, if the network hadn't have interfered so much. Because they even turned around in the last couple of seasons and said, okay, now let's call it Star Trek. It wasn't Star Trek for 3 seasons, but now we're going to call it Star Trek Enterprise. Okay.
But has anything in your viewpoint changed over the years about Enterprise?
No, I wouldn't say that because, like I said, I didn't get to watch it. I didn't get to watch it when it first came out. I didn't even watch the last season until probably 4 or 5 years ago. It was on Netflix, you know. So, so yeah, I think it was just one of these Star Trek shows that was the outlier for me because I didn't get to be a fan of it as consistently as I did the other shows. But going back and looking at it now, I think it was a strong show. I think it was a good show from the beginning, and I think that the network mucking around with it is what killed it, because now we've got to do what the network thinks is going to make it a better show. And I think that kind of ruined it a little bit. I mean, I like the last season was good, but it was too late by that point. They had mucked around with it so much that they had already lost a lot of their fan base by the time they got to the really good, what's considered by most fans to be the good season.
So something I think might, and this I really need to do a rewatch on, something I might have a different opinion on now, is season 3. Because I didn't like season 3. I didn't like the war aspect of it. But now after Discovery and after, you know, the Klingon War and what we've seen in New Trek, I may be a little more generous with season 3 of Voyager, or of Enterprise, when I go back and rewatch it.
Well, you've also got to realize that we were actually at war when this show was on, because it premiered 2 weeks all the after more, 9/11.
Yeah, all the more reason to make it different than what's going on in real life. Yeah.
Well, Star Trek has always kind of mirrored the real world.
Yeah, but like, I feel like it should be doing, it's almost too obvious to make it such a direct parallel. It's like, I guess I prefer it when the allegories are a little bit more veiled or a little bit more inventive than just being a one-for-one. So, Scott, what about you? Any changing views on Enterprise or Trek overall?
Yeah. Over the years, my opinion of Enterprise has, I think, only gotten stronger. And it was never bad to begin with. Like Voyager, I caught Broken Bow when it premiered, and probably a chunk of the first season as it was airing, but then I fell away from it. I can't remember how much I saw beyond that while it was airing. I know that my first full dedicated sit down and watch the whole series wasn't until like 2009 or 10. And it was a pretty solid and consistent binge. And I felt in the first season a bit like Rick and Sean have said regarding T'Pol. I thought that the characterization and the performance was overly stiff. Like aiming for the logical, emotionless take that we've seen in Vulcans before, but not quite hitting it. But that did soften and improve pretty quickly. I think, like, certainly by the second season, it started to change up. And then when they gave Jolene more to work with, when we got into season three, and to Paul's experimentation with Trillium D, that opened up a lot of avenues. Let her not necessarily just show flat out more emotions, but to play with the different shades of them as the character was struggling with them. I thought that was really interesting to watch. Season three is absolutely my favorite season of Enterprise and one of my favorite seasons of Trek. They borrowed a Starfleet at War concept from DS9. They changed it up a little bit, so it's not necessarily Starfleet, but just this one ship that's trying to stop a war. They took a multi-season background story from DS9 in the form of the Dominion War, and they shrank it down to make it one season where it's all about this. They still managed to find a way to put a decent number of filler episodes in there, but still, they took one season to tell one story. It was ambitious. It wasn't perfect, but I really liked that they tried, and I was pleased with the result. And then season four, when they experimented with multi-episode arcs that don't take up the whole season, I thought that was very clever. Making stories that are too big for one episode, but you can't support a whole season on it. So let's make a 2 or 3 episode arc and wrap it up and call it good. And then later in the season, or maybe not later, but almost right away, let's do another 2-episode arc or 3 that plays off of the previous one in the Augments. Wait, hold on. Getting this mixed up. Yes, you had the arc with Soong and his Augments, and then right on the heels of that, you had the Klingons experimenting with Augments. And then we get the quote-unquote explanation for why Klingons don't have ridges on their heads in TOS. So the entire series was looking for ways to... they were picking things from TOS and say, let's explain this and let's explain that. Didn't always work, but it was kind of fun to see. I'm really taking a shotgun approach to all my different opinions and takes on Enterprise. Because I know in the first two seasons, one of the things I didn't like was that they wanted a more low-tech version of a starship. They didn't want the really advanced technology that we see, especially in Next Generation and Voyager. They wanted something a bit more analog, a bit more submarine-like. But everything was so clean and so bland set dressing. It didn't always mix. So I didn't love that. Sean's opinion of Harry Kim in Voyager and Garrett's performance, that's how I feel about Meriwether on Enterprise.
Mayweather,
sorry. Thank you. And I wish that I could say otherwise. Anthony Montgomery is awesome. I saw him at a convention. I don't think I got a chance to talk to him, but I got to see him, and he's a great dude. But I don't think his performance has ever really got better over the course of the four seasons.
I don't think that was his fault.
Yeah. That's true. They didn't give him a whole lot to work with. But every time I've gone back and rewatched Enterprise, I've liked it a little bit more. The first two seasons, I dislike it less, and then seasons 3 and 4, I like it even more. Because they were trying new things. As Sean said, it was too little too late because it couldn't keep the show running for a fifth season. But especially going into the second half of that series, they tried. They really tried, and it showed. And I wish they'd been given a chance to keep trying a little bit longer.
I will say one of my changing views over time is that originally when I saw the finale, I was fine with it, and now I hate it.
Can you explain why?
Because I felt like they didn't get their own finale. Their finale was part of a different show. And I also didn't like that the way Trip got killed. And I think that, you know, and then in the novels, the first thing they did was bring Trip back. You know, all the Star Trek shows like have continuations in the novels. Like they have another season in novels, in novel form. And in the Enterprise version, the first thing that they did was say Trip didn't really die. But yeah,
he joined Section 31, and they changed the historical records to say he died in an explosion, and that was fiction to cover the fact that he was brought into Section 31.
Yeah, that's right. And I felt that bringing Riker and Troy into the mix was it's a way to get ratings, I guess. It's a way to get some TNG fans to come and watch your finale and stuff, but I felt like Enterprise should have been given their own story instead of making their story part of another series. Because even the wrap up of the show was Riker and Troy in the holodeck. You know, that's how they wrapped up the story. I didn't like that.
Yeah, I did at the time. Had never done that, then we never would have gotten the brilliant, very short trek that spoofs that.
Yeah, I know.
So it's all worth it.
And I think Brandon Braga is the one that wrote that episode. And I think that he said that that's the first time that Scott Bakula was ever angry with him. Was when they were filming that episode.
One thing that took me by surprise, I guess this could be a change, but it was something that I didn't realize. Somebody a year or so ago, it might even have been Unique, maybe, I don't know, put out, who is your favorite Star Trek character? And I thought, oh, that's an easy question. And then I started thinking about it, and then I realized it's Trip Tucker. And that shocked the hell out of me.
'Cause, go on.
And it's not that it's not that I think he was better written than anybody else or anything, but it's just like, if someone said you can sit down and have a, you know, have dinner or have a beer or hang out with any one character from any Star Trek series, it would be Trip. He's just such a nice guy and such a relatable person. And I never would have thought that would be the person I'd pick. But when I just thought about it without thinking about it, if that makes any sense, I was like, yeah, Trip. I'd go fishing with Trip.
Well, I do like that he's the character that questions things. So yeah. when Archer comes down and says, you know, Starfleet says we're going to do it like this. Well, why are we going to do it like that? That's stupid. You know, and T'Pol would say Vulcans do it like this. Well, that's stupid, you know. But yeah, I agree with you. I don't know if I'd say he's my favorite, but he is a great character.
All right, well, let's move on to, I mean, let's just cover New Trek in general. Because, you know, the shows are too new for us to have, you know, changing views about the series themselves, unless any of you do. But for me, the more obvious question is, like, has anything that they've done in these new series altered your view of the franchise, or, you know, tainted your view? Because, like, I don't want to be that fan who's like, oh, you just ruined my childhood. But I do think the TV show Picard has done a disservice to the character Picard.
I don't disagree.
Well, I'd like to hear you talk about that a little bit more.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I just, you know, I understand that, you know, Patrick Stewart wanted Picard to have more layers and that he wanted to exercise some of his own demons regarding his own abusive childhood. But I think it was a mistake to put that dynamic into Picard's family. I feel like there was more nuance in what had previously been established in Picard's family. because Picard's father had already been presented as kind of like a taskmaster and kind of a jerk, but to make him like egregiously, I don't know if abusive is the right word, but yeah, like to make him that problematic, it, what bothers me about it, and not to be like the Roddenberry, but what bothers me about it is that this is not the world that was presented in early Star Trek of like, you know, now I don't think there's any such thing as a utopia because that's a subjective term. You know, one person's utopia is another person's dystopia. But the world or Earth as presented in TOS and then more so in TNG is like, things are pretty chill. And yeah, there might still be some problems. There might be interpersonal conflicts. There might be bad morals. And sure, a family might have some issues. But the way it was presented in TNG with just like, you know, Jean-Luc wants to go to Starfleet Academy and his dad wants him to stay at the Vineyard. That's a realistic, relatable, nuanced view of a family. But like, daddy, you know, hits mummy and mummy's suicidal and she has this like super grave mental illness that should not be a problem in the 24th century as presented up to this point, that bothered me. Because now we're presenting a world that heretofore did not exist. So you're completely rewriting the rules of what Star Trek is. So that really bothered me in terms of and saying that this is like a memory that Picard had repressed his whole life. Because now, you know, I'm recapping a TNG currently. And so in every episode, I have to rethink my interpretation of Picard. Because, oh, this thing he's doing here, you know, how does his, you know, repressed childhood memory affect this or that or the other? It really taints my viewing of TNG in a way that, I mean, I'm mining it for humor in my recaps, but I find it genuinely bothersome. I think they genuinely made a mistake by taking the nuance out of Jean-Luc Picard and just ham-fisting in, oh, blah, 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 generic abusive family, mental illness, suicide. Like, those topics are too big for what they did with them in the show Picard. I feel like they were not treated with respect. I feel that they were, like I said, ham-fisted. And I don't like what they did to the character Picard. I don't like what they did with those topics on the show Picard.
Well, they did the same. I mean, they did the same thing in Star Trek V. All of a sudden, you've got to give these characters this really dark backstory. And it almost seems like a present-day thing. That because they do it all the time, you know, you want to bring back characters and you want to give them this, you want to give them this tragic backstory and stuff like that. But they've been doing it for a while. Like I said, Star Trek V, they did the same thing.
No, I agree, Sean. And I don't mind the occasional character having a tragic backstory, but like now every single character has to have a tragic backstory to the point where they're retconning. Yeah. You know, TOS characters in Strange New Worlds. Like, now all of a sudden, Uhura's backstory is super dark. It's like, why? Why can't she just be a happy person doing a good job? Why does she have to be tortured?
It takes misery to go into Starfleet.
But that's ridiculous. Yeah. Like again, I find it disrespectful. Because it's like, can't characters be paragons? Can't they be role models? Why do they all have to be tortured, traumatized, so that, I don't know, so that like the traumatized kids at home have someone to look up to? But can't we look up to someone who's just doing well and is just a good person?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, even in TNG, you know, their so-called, you know, tragic backstories, like, you know, Geordi's blind, but it's like, so what? And that was kind of the point. It's not a tragic backstory. He had a disability, but it was no big deal. He was still awesome. And like, you know, Yar's backstory was tragic and it was done. It was handled so poorly. And so you cannot blame Denise Crosby for leaving.
No.
But everyone else was Maurice Hurley. Just, Well, there, yeah, you know, and I mean, it's a refrain, you know, the problems are always coming down to dickwads behind the scenes.
Yeah.
But,
especially in the 90s. Yeah.
But yeah, like TNG, Voyager, these are like, again, you know, one or two of them might have a tragic backstory, but like to have every single character be tragic, it just, it's tiresome and it makes no sense. Because some of us just had happy childhoods and went on to live our lives. Like, and of course there's angst. Of course there's still going to be problems. Of course there's still going to be conflicts. But not all of us had to witness our parents be murdered by robbers. Like,
yeah,
you know, not everyone can be Batman. And now you've got me ranting.
Not everyone can be Batman.
And I mean... especially because, you know, most people confronted with what Batman was confronted with would not turn into Batman. They'd turn into the Joker. But in any case.
I can't disagree with what you're saying, Neek. But I kind of like specifically zero in on Picard season two for that. They took it in a direction that I thought was kind of unnecessary. And I think that's borne out through the fact that when we get to season three, virtually everything that happened in season two is kind of ignored. I mean, they don't necessarily undo it. Like, characters that disappeared at the end of season two remain disappeared. They don't come back in season three. They just don't reference the events of season two much, if at all. Mm-hmm. When you get to season three. As far as changing views of Trek, I watch the newer stuff, and Prodigy and Lower Decks are more or less exempt from this because they're very much their own thing. While they exist in the larger Star Trek universe, they are designed to be, for the most part, unintrusive to the franchise as a whole.
Yeah.
But you get Discovery, Picard, Strange New Worlds, and they are, I think, by and large, working hard and being, for the most part, successful in finding their place in this pre-existing franchise, this pre-existing universe that has been built, while taking into account the fact that television is made and presented much differently now than it was in the 60s, in the 80s, 90s. Everything's going to look different. Everything's going to be constructed differently. The stories that are told are going to be season-long stories told in chapters rather than episode by episode. They try to go back to the episodic format in Strange New Worlds, but even that, there's still through lines. There are things happening throughout the season where you get to the end of the season. If you haven't seen, if you start with the season finale, you're going to be lost. Even though most episodes of Strange New Worlds are mostly self-contained stories, there's still going to be stuff in there that feeds into the finale that you will need when you get to the end. And I like that as we all have been watching television for years and decades, this is how television is done now. I think that if they presented us with a Strange New Worlds series where each episode was self-contained and they hit the closing credits back at status quo, so they can start again next week and again the week after that with no real development, because you got to be able to watch these in any order that you want, I don't think that we would enjoy it as much. I don't think that it would resonate with the viewers, old or new, if they did it that way now. So they're keeping up with how television has changed over the years, usually decently. Usually. I think one of the pitfalls is they haven't cracked the code on how to create a new series with new characters in a previously unexplored period of time and just tell a new story. Everything has to have a connection to the past. Picard, obvious. You're bringing back characters that we've seen in previous series. You're centering it on the captain of Next Generation, and then you bring back the entire cast for the third season. Discovery. They had to bring in the Enterprise. They bring in Spock. It's a prequel for the first two seasons. And then for seasons 3 and 4, they travel centuries into the future, but there's always elements in the stories that they're telling that connect back to series that we've already seen. It was born out of a prequel, and it's never going to shake that. Lower Decks is nothing but references all over the place. Prodigy continues on some of the characters from Voyager, and none of it is purely standalone. If they created a series that took place, it could even take place in, you know, the same time period as Lower Decks, but give us a crew that we've never met on a ship we've never seen, and have that series tell stories that are not connected with anything that we've seen in Star Trek before. I don't know if or when they're ever going to try to do that, because everything in New Trek,
I think they're afraid to do that from a monetary standpoint.
Most likely, yeah.
Yeah,
most likely they are, which means they're going to be stuck in a box of, are we going to make a new Trek series? Yes, we should. Okay, what's it going to be a spinoff of?
Yeah, or how can we connect it? Yeah,
yeah. It can't just exist in the universe. It has to have a connection that you can follow to a previous series or character. And they're going to run out of ideas pretty soon if they have to anchor new content to legacy stuff.
I will say one thing that I've had a changing view on, and I stand by everything that I said on this podcast, every positive thing that I said, but the first season of Discovery was a mess. It was good. I still enjoyed it. And it didn't ruin my childhood or anything like that. But yeah, like a lot of it was behind the scenes kind of stuff, because the first two episodes were written by who was it? And written by,
hang on, I've got it pulled up.
So the one that they fired it, him after the
Brian was Fuller.
Yeah,
that's right. So he did the first two episodes, and they use his story, but then it like turns into a completely different show after those first two episodes, yeah, which is why they showed those two episodes on the same night.
What, his son killed himself, and it was tragic. It wasn't like, you know, a Bryan Singer. Well, no, it was a Bryan Singer thing too. So excuse me, because we had talked about, I'd totally forgotten about that, was, you know, yeah, he was going to be the showrunner, and then his life went to shit and he left the show. And
then the showrunners that replaced him turned out to be really awful to their to their writers, and, you know, completely different people from what we were seeing on that After Trek show.
Yeah,
every week. And so I think that the show kind of suffered a little bit. I think that the fans were really up in arms about how different they made the Klingons, which I was fine with the way they changed the Klingons, but I will admit they changed the Klingons a lot. But I mean, besides all that, but the fact that they also, in the middle of the season, we're going to go to the Mirror Universe for like three whole episodes, and then come back, and it's like a year later almost or something. So there was some weird stuff going on in that season, but overall, I still stand by that it was a good show and I enjoyed it and I had a lot of positive things to say on this podcast. I stand by all of it, but I will admit that it was kind of a mess.
There is one thing that I've realized, my attitude towards the new Trek shows has changed. I'm tired. I'm so tired of defending the show against.
Oh yeah. Random.
Yeah, I mean, I might suggest getting off of social media when it comes to that.
Yeah.
Like, I know, like, as podcasters, we've got to be tapped into sort of what's going on. But, like, for your own mental health, because I know exactly what you're talking about, Rick, like, it is exhausting, the onslaught of hate. It does take a toll.
That's why, if I'm being totally honest, while Rick, the viewer, is really pissed off that this is going to be Discovery's last season, Rick, the social media creature, is kind of glad it's going to be done.
Yeah.
I'm so tired of people calling Discovery STD. Like, it's like this is the biggest insult we can come up with. Let's call it STD.
Yeah. For a good number of years now, I have consciously taken myself out of social media places where a lot of discussion happens. I will use social media to look for, and I will keep an eye out for, like, news stories, like the trailer for Discovery. I'll see that when it comes up, because that I make sure to look in the right places for things like that. But I don't go to blogs or forums or message boards. I don't use Twitter anymore, and I'm not going to call it that other thing. Don't ask me to. I don't go on it anymore because I don't want to see the comments. I don't want to see the discussion, the back and forth, because I'm never going to be happier after it than I was before it. And I came to the decision, or the realization, I suppose, years ago, that the people who jump online and they complain about new Trek, whatever their reasons for complaining, you're not going to be able to help them see it a different way. If you try and defend the show, trying to defend new Star Trek to people who have decided they're going to hate it, it's going to be a losing battle. You try to defend Star Trek, you will lose. Because the people who go online hating it so much, it's not because they actually hate the show. It's because they love to hate it. They make it a point to hate it because that's what they want to do. And if that's what they want to do, then you're not going to change their mind. So I stopped putting myself in a position where I might want to try, or where I would have to see other people try.
Yeah, that might be one of my changing views as well, is that I realize now that a lot of my chair almost dumped me out for some reason. I realize now that a lot of people that call themselves Star Trek fans are not really Star Trek fans. They're just science fiction fans. Because if you claim that new Trek is too woke for you, or you complain that there's too many characters on Discovery that are either gay or non-binary or, you know, or something else, then you're missing the point. You're missing the point of what Star Trek's been from the beginning. It's always been woke, whatever your definition of woke is. Then you're a science fiction fan. You like watching stuff with spaceships and stuff, but you're not really a Star Trek fan.
I think another difficulty about Discovery, though, is that I'm right there with you in that I want to defend it, but I also, objectively speaking, don't think it's a very good show. Like, it's too action oriented. It's, you know, not enough character stuff. It's like the science fiction concepts are not interesting. Like you said, Rick, at the top, you know, it's always just a MacGuffin, and it's not actually tackling interesting issues with allegories. So it's like, yes, Star Trek has always been woke, but also Star Trek has always been about something. Like, each individual episode has been about something, and Discovery, not so much. So as much as, like, yeah, as a Star Trek fan, I'll defend any of the Star Trek shows. But if I'm being super objective, I think Discovery is kind of a weak show in the way that a lot of modern TV is weak.
Yeah.
Just from don't the things risks. They're just, like I said, they're just like, you know, they it's like the writers think, oh, if it's science fiction, then it must be an action show, which is why I love Moon Show so much, because it's Moon not show. Just an action show. And so, yeah, so, but I'm also with you, Rick, in terms of like, I'm tired when it comes to Discovery, not because I'm tired of the show Discovery, but because Discovery is actually why I started writing recaps in the first place, because I was excited for a new Star Trek thing. Mm-hmm. And like, but the vitriol, my God, like if I post a TNG recap on Facebook, you know, the comments are mostly like, oh, haha, that's a funny joke, or I remember this episode, good times. Mm-hmm. The freaking comments on anything Discovery related, it's like, it doesn't matter what I put up there as like the header image, there will be a billion people tearing it apart in either direction.
Yeah.
Like if I say something critical of the show, there's going to be a million people saying like, I'm a Nazi. If I say something defending the show, there's going to be a million people saying like I'm stupid or whatever it is. Like
so it's, you want Star Trek to be destroyed. You hate
the
fans.
It's just, yeah, it's so exhausting. It's like, dudes, it's just a joke. It's just a joke. Like, and that's actually another issue I have with Discovery is that I don't think it's fun. Like, TNG and Voyager, even Deep Space Nine, as dark as Deep Space Nine got, it was a fun show. Like, it was just a good time. And Discovery has elements of that. Like, Tilly was a fun character in the beginning. Mm-hmm. But overall, like, yeah, it's sort of like, you know, we were ranting earlier about how everyone has to have a tragic backstory. Like, it's not fun anymore. And that's one of the reasons I do love Lower Decks so much and Strange New Worlds, because those shows are fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, you feel good after you watch them, whereas Discovery, you feel down, or at least I do a lot of the time.
I don't disagree.
And that was certainly an issue with Picard, was that it's just like, it's a depressing show. It's not feel-good TV. And that's, I feel like, was a core element of classic Trek, is that it was feel-good TV. Like, even if something dark happened in the show, like, at the end of it, it would always wrap up with, like, well, we solved that problem, and we did it together, and we're a team, and yay. Whereas Discovery, it ends, and it's like, well, they're... You know, they genocided an entire planet and everything is going to shit. Oh, this sucks. It's like, Jesus. Okay. Like, you know, Star Trek was, you know, kind of utopic and escapist back in the day. Like, you know, and sort of to your earlier point, Sean, like, you know, Enterprise, they went to war because in real life there was a war. It's like, I mean, I don't agree that right now the real world is going to shit. But it seems everyone else thinks that. And so that they're putting that into the show, I think is a mistake. I think that's the exact wrong approach to take with. I mean, absolutely, yes, science fiction should shine a light on what's going on in society. But to have that light always be, I mean, dark. That's an oxymoron, but you see what I'm saying. Like,
it's a black light. It's a black light.
Yeah, you know, but to always make it so dour to the point where, like, again, I get it. You know, 1984. Yes, sometimes you need really dark science fiction to get your point across, but that's never what Star Trek was, or at least for me. I don't know. I'm ranting at this point.
You make a good point. And we're seeing that a lot, especially in Picard and Discovery. There's a lot of brood. There's a lot of darkness, both metaphorical and literal. Yes, yeah. I'm harping on the dark lighting, sets again. Yeah. And I think if they could try to turn it around, they could try to give the viewers some Star Trek that is a bit lighter, that is a bit more optimistic, that is a bit more hopeful. Strange New Worlds is doing that. To a degree, there's more fun in that show. There's more light and color in that show. they could, I think, continue in that direction. And I know I was the guy that was just not too long ago complaining that everything, all new Star Trek is just spun off from previous Star Treks and they aren't doing anything new in the universe. But if they still aren't comfortable making something new out of whole Star Trek cloth, if they try to make Star Trek Legacy, as a lot of people have been rumoring and kicking around the idea, if you let Terry Metalis run the show like he did in Picard season 3 without I suspect he was either told to or felt that he had to keep the darker tonality that we had seen in Picard season 1 and 2, and he kept that going in season 3. If you let him start a new series in Legacy and say you don't have to make it tonally consistent with Picard seasons 1, 2, 3, you can do your own thing. With the amount of respect and love that he obviously has for TNG, I think that he might be able to make something a bit more hopeful and a bit brighter in a new Star Trek series. Well, and yes, it's going to have legacy characters and it's going to have Jack Crusher, but
I forgot about him.
I think there's a lot of potential in something like that, or try something new.
I just want a Captain Seven series. That's, I don't think that's too much to ask.
Well, don't forget, Terry Metalis also made 12 Monkeys, the TV series.
So okay, I never watched it.
So he does. I mean, he does. What's like your point? He does like the dark and brooding kind of stuff.
But I don't think Monkeys he needs kind of to make that.
Huh? I guess.
Yeah, he may like that, but I don't think that it's something that he needs to do.
Well, I think that we will be very lucky to get a Star Trek Legacy. I think right now the future of Star Trek is hanging on a razor's edge.
And so all of you guys are saying you do want more Star Trek, because I was going to ask, do we think that we're getting diminishing returns at this point with the franchise?
No, I think that... I mean, I still love the new Pike series, and that for some stupid reason I forget the name of it.
Strange New World.
I mean, I love that show. I'm looking forward to what they're going to do with it, and I'm looking forward to what happens with Section 31, because I think that depending on how successful Section 31 is, could determine a lot, because if it's successful, if people like it, we could get more one-off Star Trek movies, which is something that I said when they launched Discovery and they started talking about doing more series. I said it would be great if they would just do some one-off movies or do a series that, instead of releasing 20 episodes every year or 10 episodes every year, just do one movie a year or every other year. And put more, you can put more money into it.
I don't know if I agree with that. I don't think Star Trek works as movies. It has to be a show. None of the movies, I'm exaggerating, but like the movies are not good. They might be good movies, like they're good action movies, but they're not good Star Trek. They're not good storytelling. They're not about ideas. They're just about pew-pews. And like your mileage may vary. If you're into Star Trek for the pew-pews, then you know, good for you, but that's not why I come to Star Trek.
Well, I totally agree with you. I've said this for a long time. Star Trek needs to be a TV show. Even with these truncated 10 to 13 episode seasons.
Yeah, it's not enough.
But it's still better than a movie.
But it's a show that needs time to breathe.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm finding, you know, in my 14 billionth rewatch of TNG as I recap it. It's like that was a show that knew how to breathe. Mm-hmm. My God, it gave the characters time to just be people. And you never see that in any shows these days anymore, hardly, except for maybe Moonshow.
As tired as I am, I want more Trek. I don't want to. We all lived through the dark times between the end of Enterprise and the beginning of the 2009 when JJ's movie came out. And that may or may not have been a blessing. I mean, it certainly brought Star Trek back. I can't deny that.
It brought it back in the wrong packaging. We've been talking for
that's another show. It kept it alive. I don't know if it brought it back.
Yeah, and we're veering off topic so much.
Our changing views. Do we not want to revisit those three movies?
Does anyone
don't have to do a whole segment, but you know.
Does anyone have a change? No, haven't changed my views of those.
That's a good point, Sean. I guess certainly those movies changed my perception of Star Trek in that they made me angry. I think they're fine action movies. They're terrible Star Trek stories. And they take a giant dump all over Star Trek. And it is what it is. I mean, it brought Star Trek back, but I don't know that that was a good thing. Go ahead, Rick.
It did change one thing for me. And for this, I am grateful for them. One thing I've said all along with all three movies, even Into Darkness, which I think is worse than Star Trek V, it finally got me to accept that someone other than our original cast could play these characters. Because as awful as awful is maybe too strong a word, as much as I really didn't care for the Kelvinverse movies, The Beyond was kind of fun. I loved the actors in the roles, and that's the saving grace of those films, because there's nothing else I like about them. But I think, you know, Chris Pine and Zachary Quinto and I'm blanking on her name, played Uhura.
Zoe Saldana.
Yeah.
And Carl Urban, too. Good. Yeah. I agree. They were good. Yelchin, I agree.
They nailed it. They nailed their characters. Even Simon Pegg, who I think kind of went a little overboard. But, they showed us that we don't have to be so precious about who plays these characters.
Agreed.
And that opened the door for me to accept
Strange New Worlds,
so that I'm grateful to them for.
Yeah, fair point. So we've been talking about 14 hours now. Do we want to wrap this up, or?
I think we're done.
What are your changing views on the Star Trek the Animated Series?
It gets way more shit than it deserves. End of discussion.
Yeah.
Rick, what are your evolving and changing views on Very Short Treks?
Well, you can't say we don't have opinions. All right. Sean, do you have anything to plug?
Just this. Cosmic Potato, when new ones come out. We're going to record one probably sometime in the next week or so. So be on the lookout for that.
Yeah.
Other than that, keep checking the network. We got lots of stuff going on there.
And Rick, what have you got?
Same as Sean.
Okay. And Scott, what would you like to promote?
I can be heard in various places on this network, including Cosmic Potato, the Super Fan Talk podcast, What's Your Headcanon, Captain Game Show, and as the usual host of this very show, that Star Trek podcast. If you're tired of listening to me talk, then you can visit my website at www.planetrisecreative.com and see some of the graphic artwork that I do for fun and profit.
And you can go to my website to read my Star Trek recaps. It is superanemic.com. And when For All Mankind is on the air, I am the host of Moon Show. A For All Mankind podcast. And if any of my pod squad gets off their butts and watches Silo, then we could also do a special episode of Moon Show about Silo. Or we could watch any number of other things that have been suggested in the chat and do a special episode of Moon Show about those things. We'll see if that ever happens. And that will wrap it up.
This is where we say, bye, Spock.
Yeah. Bye, Spock. Bye, Spock.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of That Star Trek Podcast. You can contact us on Facebook, or you can send us an email at thatstartrekpodcast@gmail.com. Help the show grow by giving us a 5-star rating and a review on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcatcher. Be sure to join us again next time on That Star Trek Podcast.